Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This episode of Know-How is brought to you by Lynda.com. Learn what you want when you want with access to over 2,000 high-quality online courses, all for one low monthly price. To try it free for 7 days, visit lynda.com/know-how. That's lynda.com/know-how. In this episode of Know-How, we're taking your feedback, then we're going to show you the best way to have a mobile podcasting rig and field audio. Welcome to Know How. This is the Twitch show where we bend, break, build, and upgrade. I'm Father Robert Ballasaire.
And I'm Brian Burnett.
And for the next 30 minutes or so, we're going to show you some projects, maybe give you some knowledge that will help you geek out in your own personal life. Now, Brian, We like our audience, right?
Yeah, for the most part.
I mean, they're good people.
They're pretty cool.
They're not bad. In fact, I'd say they're a group of very smart, talented individuals who both present us with challenges and give us answers. I kind of like that about them.
And they're self-sufficient. You know, they answer their own questions a lot of the time, which helps me out. So.
It's kind of like the geek version of cats.
Yeah. They spend a little bit of attention, and then they go away. And
there we go. Well, what we thought was we would start a once-a-month section of Know-How, a full segment, mm-hmm. where we look through our Google Plus community, we find the best projects, the best questions, and, yes, the best answers, and we give them to you. We talk about them. We maybe present you a couple of hardware choices, a few things that you could try at home to get things solved. But we didn't want to do this by ourselves, did we?
No. We had to call in a special voice actor.
A feedback voice actor.
Yeah, something
right,
like that.
Right, right. So without further ado, let's bring in our feedback specialist, it's Greg. How do you pronounce it?
I believe it's Gregory.
Gregory.
He's coming in
Gregory
live from
Burnett.
Location at the Sky Deck.
Yes. So, Gregory, how are you doing over there?
Good. How are you doing, Padre?
Very informative. Thank you, Greg.
That's excellent. All right. Let's get right to it. So we've got a couple of comments that we pulled down from the Google Plus page. We started with this one from Bill McVicker, who said, hey, you know what? I need a better trackpad. What do you think, Greg?
Well, Bill says, I am disabled and I'm going to buy a new laptop. All the new laptops have off-center touchpads, which makes it hard for me to use. I use Dragon, naturally speaking, but there are times when I need a mouse. Does anybody know what would be a solution for my problem? I'm hoping there's someone in this community who has a similar problem or knows of someone who does.
Okay, I've actually seen this before, right? Some of the newer laptops have offset the trackpads.
So that
you don't accidentally tap it while typing. Now, there are some of the newer ones and some of the more expensive ones, like, for example, the Acer S7.
Which I'm a big fan of.
But you know, also some of the Mac models that just have a big old touchpad dead center still.
Yeah.
But I think what our audience member wanted was something that could give him more control. I mean, he says that he's slightly disabled. He doesn't have complete control of his hands. Mm-hmm. The ability to use what motion he has to affect change on the screen.
Right. And so a couple of solutions that it looks like you kind of found is a bamboo touchpad.
Yeah. So this thing right now, if you look at the product camera, Alex, this is a bamboo tablet from Wacom. Now, the idea behind this is a huge touch-sensitive surface, which also happens to be pressure-sensitive. They created this thing for artists, but it's essentially just a big trackpad. I know this could be cumbersome, but this is something that you could put right underneath your keyboard or right on the wrist rest, and you get a huge surface with which to operate the mouse and the cursor surface. This is not an expensive solution. I believe this was selling for about $45 on Amazon.
Okay.
You could probably find it cheaper elsewhere on the internet. But this, again, is from Wacom. It's called the Bamboo. Mm-hmm. Maybe that might be a solution.
For a fact that our Skydesk correspondent, he did reviews on BYB of some of the smaller bamboo tablets because he's an artist. So, and they come with stylus, too, so maybe that would help a little bit also.
Yeah. And again, It all depends on exactly what kind of solution that you need, but that's probably one of the ones I would suggest. You can't just move the trackpad on a wrist rest, and I'm assuming that you don't want to buy a really expensive laptop just to get the properly positioned trackpad.
Yeah, yeah. I said give it a shot, depending on what kind of size desk you have and what room you have. That's probably the best way to go.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's move on. We've got some feedback from James Harrison, who... he wants some shiny, shiny things.
Who doesn't like those things? Mm-hmm. Greg, what's he say?
Well, James says, hey, so after watching episode 83 of Know How, I decided it might be a good idea to incorporate the dancing LEDs into my PC, which I often listen to music on. However, being a fan of LED illuminated PCs, I wanted to know if I could incorporate a switch into the wiring that would either make it stay on when I'm not listening to music or stay off when I'm finished using my PC. I plan to power them with batteries secured out of the side, inside my case.
Yeah, and we understand there's a couple of typos. It's cool. Okay. Don't worry, Greg, you're not fired.
You're good.
Yet.
Sorry, guys.
Okay, no. Actually, this is going to be your solution.
So that's a Molex connector?
This is a standard Molex connector. If you go ahead and look at the product shot for this one, this is what you would see inside your PC. Now, some of the newer connectors, the ones that you attach to the modern SATA drives, don't look like this, but they operate the same way. I've got two black wires, which are my common, and then I've got my two hot wires, which are red and yellow. Now, inside every computer, there are two rails. There's two voltages. The red one is supplying 5 volts. The yellow one is supplying 12 volts. So what we see a lot is we see these connectors leading off of either the 5-volt or the 12-volt rail, powering things like LEDs or little devices. I use them for fans. The nice thing about this is that, you can use these things to power pretty much anything. And it runs off the power supply of the computer, so you don't have to worry about batteries.
Okay. Well, we all like LEDs around here.
Yeah, we do. We do. We're kind of LED crazy. Now, one of the other things that he asked for is he wanted a way to keep it working while he wasn't listening to music. And for right. that, well, if it's sound activated, there's something that you could really easily use, and that is just an audio file with a low hum on it.
That's just, I guess, yeah, that would work.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the simple solutions.
Or maybe the Star Trek engine noise. That's one that I like to keep
in
the background.
It kind of keeps it pulsing. Okay. Let's go to a related question. We have one here from Mark, I'm going to say, Rolu?
Rolu? What's Rolu. He got, Greg?
Your guess is as good as mine. His question is, dumb question for episode 83. If you have the lights plugged into whatever is playing the music to get them to dance, how do you hear the music?
Ah, okay. Now, this is something that someone else in the chat room figured out really quickly. That is, you just get a Y connector, right? Mm-hmm. You get one of those splitters, so it goes from one input one output to two inputs.
Right.
Here's the thing. Not all devices can provide enough voltage through their audio output to be able to drive a speaker and those transistors at the same time. In fact, that small player that I used, it wouldn't be able to. If you did that, it would drop the voltage too low and you wouldn't actually get the transistors to trigger at all. Now, some of the larger devices, like my laptop, had no problem because they provided plenty of voltage. There wasn't as much of a drop-off when I split it. What I would suggest, and we use these around the studio all the time, is a headphone preamp. I believe, Alex, you've got a link there from Amazon that will show you some of the ones that you can buy very inexpensively, between $10 and $100, depending on how many outputs you want and how much of quality you want to get out of these things.
Okay.
But it has one input, so that comes from your device, either from your computer or your music player.
And then it splits it off.
It splits it off, right. Okay. And now, the cool thing about this is that, like, that ART headphone app, that's the one that I like. I use that all the time. This one has 4 independent volume controls, so you can leave the one connected to the LEDs turned up all the way.
And then they'll always be...
And they'll always be bright, and they'll always be fluffy, and so on and so forth. But then the one connected to your speakers and the one connected to your headphone, you can independently control them.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah. And again, those aren't that expensive. Go ahead and go that route. It's much better than trying to take that small signal and split it out.
Sounds like a good solution. Yeah. So next we have Andy. Andy Arkusinski?
Arkusinski.
That sounds about right. What do you have to say, Greg?
I may be pronouncing some of the terms here wrong, but he says, in researching motherboards, I find that some advertise support for RAID. What is the relationship between hardware RAID and FreeNAS. Does FreeNAS require hardware support, or can I do RAID entirely in software? If hardware RAID exists, will FreeNAS take advantage of it?
Okay, so now you've run into something that a lot of geeks really get worked up over. Hardware RAID versus software RAID. There are pros and cons for each one. When we're talking about hardware RAID, we mean that we have a card in there, normally it's like a PCI or PCI Express card, that connects to the hard drives. And so to the operating system, to the motherboard, it looks like you have just one drive, one big drive, one RAID array.
Okay.
All the calculations are done by the card. Now, a lot of people like this, and the reason why they like it is it keeps your CPU usage low. And if it's a very well-designed card, it could speed things up.
Okay. The other way, though?
Yeah. So with software, you get a couple advantages. First, you can implement newer types of RAID, like ZFS, which is the one that we use on FreeNAS. Mm-hmm. That doesn't work in hardware. You have to do that with software. Also, hooking up a device between the hard drive and the motherboard means that you're not going to get the smart information. Have you ever seen that on your hard drive before?
Yeah.
It tells you whether or not the drive is working properly.
Exactly.
Yeah, so if you put a card in between the motherboard and the hard drives, you won't get you won't get that information. You have to get it off the card itself.
It's
not always a good thing. But the big thing is you can actually get incredible performance off of a software RAID. I'd say as good or even better than a hardware RAID, but you're going to take a CPU hit because it's going to use up a lot of your CPU. In fact, in FreeNAS, it also uses up a lot of memory to be able to do that RAID properly.
Okay. So would you recommend that more for a machine that you're not using as like your main OS and stuff? Or
you know, I'm really split back and forth. If I'm going to do a high-end server box, I absolutely want a hardware RAID card because it can do things like hot swap, right? I could pull the drives out and plug in new ones. But if this is going to be my home machine, if it's going to be my FreeNAS box, I'm probably just going to go with software RAID because I know...
Because you won't notice that much of a speed probably difference?
No. This is one of those things where there's no real answer. It all depends on your application. You have to figure out what you want and where you want your performance. That's going to determine what kind of RAID you're going to set up.
And Eric Duckman in the chat room points out that hardware RAID versus software RAID is very much like Mac versus PC.
Folks, don't. It's okay to say I prefer software RAID.
Right.
It's okay to say I prefer hardware RAID. It is not okay to say anyone who uses software RAID is an idiot or people who use hardware RAID are dorks. Don't do that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, should we move on to our next feedback question?
Yeah, we got a lot here, so.
So Joseph Sacco has a question, and Greg, would you provide us with the information?
Sure thing. So, Joseph says, I have a late 2010 Mac Mini, and I'm considering an SSD. When I check out about this Mac, it says it has a SATA bus. If it were a different grade of SATA, would it be worded differently?
Yes and no. Yeah, this is okay. So, SATA's a funny beast. Now, we've had several revisions of SATA. Now, oddly enough, we have people calling it SATA, SATA 2, SATA 3. The revision, the name's not actually SATA 1, SATA 2, SATA 3. They're all SATA with different revisions, 1, 2, and 3. But that's not important.
Okay.
What is important is the speed. Now, do you know the speeds of the different SATA buses?
Well, so SATA 1 is 1.5 gigabits per second.
Yep.
SATA 2, 3 gigabits. SATA
3
is 6 gigabits, and SATA 3.2 is 16?
16, right. So we're gradually ramping up the speed of the SATA bus.
For every revision, it goes up.
Yeah. Now, for SATA 3 and down, that's what you're used to seeing with this. It's got that standard SATA connector that we've seen since the start of the SATA standard. If you go ahead and switch to my product shot, I don't think it's going to be any better. But so this is what we're looking at. A SSD is one of the few devices that can actually start to fill up a SATA bus, especially if you combine them, like in a RAID 0. Mm-hmm. Every spinning hard drive is not going to max out even SATA 2. I mean, 3 gigabits per second, it's you're not going to transfer data faster than that. The user, Joseph, is asking whether or not he has to worry about the revisions. Mm-hmm. Answer is no, absolutely not. If your drive looks like a standard SATA drive. So it has the power connector and the bus connector that look
looks
just like
that. Looks like a little L.
Looks like a little L. Yeah. It's going to work over all revisions. The worst thing that could happen is that you'll be using a faster device on a slower bus, and you won't get all the speed.
So you won't get your performance gain so much.
Right.
But you don't have to worry. It'll work.
It'll work. Yeah. Now, there's also SATA 3.1 and SATA 3.2, which start to accommodate different types of SSD drives, like the really fast SSD drives that go on internal.
That have support for PCI Express?
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. And they have integrated support for trim so that you can move some of that off of the operating system. And then SATA 3.2 specifically deals with embedded SATA devices. You know, you're not using a card anymore. That's plugged in via a cable. It's actually a device that's inside the unit.
Oh, wow.
That's how you get those crazy, crazy speeds. But if you've got those devices, there's no way you could even plug it into your current system, so don't worry about it.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. Would that help with the gaming machine? 3.2?
It would absolutely help with the gaming machine. Because
loading Titanfall?
Yeah, yeah. But see, Titanfall is an interesting game because the loading takes a while. We've noticed that. But once you're in game,
it's fine.
It feels better.
Yeah. It's a multiplayer game, so I guess you probably have to wait for everyone else to load before so it wouldn't give you that much of an advantage. But if you're playing Skyrim or something like that, it loads super quick.
Absolutely.
That's a single-person experience.
Yep, yeah.
But anyway, moving on. Christy Estrate. We're going to make it Italian.
He's not Italian, but I'm going to be a racist stereotype. Oh, my gosh.
What did he have to say?
During everyone's names today. Christy had to say, I have a question about NAS. I have the WD Red in an Zixel NSA310. What is the best setting for power management? Should I put the HDD in sleep mode or not? Thanks.
A lot of people argue this back and forth. Again, this is sort of like the Mac versus PC debate, which is some people say, well, no, save your drive, spin it down. And other people rightly point out that, you know, leaving your drive up is good because the worst part is the spin up and the spin down.
Okay.
Right? Here's the thing. I'd say if it's a drive that's going to sit in a computer or a NAS box and you know you're not going to be using it, go ahead and let it spin down when it's not in use.
Right.
But all of my NAS devices, all my NAS boxes, I leave the drive spinning all the time because I want immediate access.
Yeah, right. At any time. Okay. Yeah.
And to me, I mean, these drives are designed to last for so long. You're not really going to lengthen or shorten the life with your power habits. It really comes to, do you want to save that a little amount of power, and how much is it worth to you to have your data immediately available?
Right. Okay.
You've run into this, right? I mean, every once in a while, your hard drive will spin down. You click it, and you have to wait there while it goes.
While it spools back up.
Yeah.
We didn't bring out the dead hard drive, did we?
No, we don't have the dead. Oh.
We forgot.
You know,
about
we
that.
Forgot that one. We've got a great demo for you in a future episode of Know How of what can happen if your drive spins down for the last time.
Yeah, Alex went down to the basement and one of the drives died. It makes a cool noise.
It's a great noise.
But
my favorite part is when it starts to lose power again. So it's
poor guy. Well, when you were talking about in a previous episode that I can't think of off the top of my head, reviving your drive by freezing and stuff. The worst, when you're trying to revive it and you're transferring the data, you don't want to turn it off again until you get everything off,
you just
off,
assume
right?
That's going to last time you're going to power. But that drive, no, that freezing won't help because you could hear the heads. They've been shredded. They're flying around the platters.
Poor guy.
Yeah, that's not coming back.
All right, what do we got next, Padre?
Well, we've got a user, Rob Gigliotti. I'm saying We've got Rob Gigliotti.
Nobody's gonna post anything anymore because they're gonna butcher my name on the show.
I know, but Greg, tell us. He's looking for a new laptop, right?
Well, Rob says, "Greetings, Know How crew. Need a new laptop powerful enough to run Photoshop and Corel and some other editing programs. Looking possibly for a Windows 8 touchscreen, but my budget is around $500. Anyone come across any deals? Should I save up for a MacBook? If so, how much to save up for one of them? I do web design and vinyl vehicle wraps/printing. Thanks in advance. P.S. Really digging Brian on the show.
Aw, thanks, bro. Wow, I appreciate that. Aww. I'm having fun doing the show.
See, it's not just your mom who likes you here.
Aw, thank goodness.
Go figure. No, but okay, so for $500, obviously, it's not a Mac.
No.
Yeah, you can't. Yeah, I mean, unless you want to buy a used Mac, and even those, they don't. I don't know of anyone selling a $500 Mac.
Maybe you could do a Hackintosh.
You could possibly do a Hackintosh, but I'm thinking this guy kind of wants to buy something off the shelf. He wants something ready-made. Yeah. There are a few boxes that you can get for $500 or less. There are two right now that are my personal favorites. The first one is the Dell 15 Touch. You were looking for a touchscreen. This one actually has it. It's got an i3 CPU, which is not great, but you didn't mention that you're going to be a heavy video editor, so it should work for you. A 15-inch LCD, 4 gigabytes of memory, a 500-gigabyte hard drive, and yes, it is touch-enabled. Now, one of the nice things about going with Dell is that you know the company is going to be there, and they'll service it in case something goes wrong. People have nightmare stories, but I've always had really good, experiences with them. What about you? Do you have any personal choices at the $500 range?
Ooh, the $500 range is a little tough. The touch screen, and then it's also, he wants touch enabled.
I think the touch screen is really going to hurt you, because you're going to have to either have to drop the other specs, or you're going to have to increase your price to get a decent touch.
I don't know. We had a few of those all-in-one PCs that look like this, that are touch-enabled, that were pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, another one I can think of is there's Acer. Acer has the Aspire V3. I think it's the -571-6492. Acer, you really got to work on your naming, because that's a horrible, horrible freaking name.
It looks like a phone number.
It does. Now, they say $549, but you can find this in retail at like on Amazon for about $500. Yeah, and
that has some pretty decent specs for it. i5, a 17-inch screen, 4 gigabytes of RAM, 500-gigabyte hard drive. But the con, no touch.
No touch. Now, here's the thing I would say. I like touch. I use it all the time. But if you're looking for a budget PC, I'd say nix the touch. Forget it. Don't get it. Get a really powerful, really well-made laptop that has decent specs, and that Acer V3 actually fits the bill. With an i5, you can even crank out video processing pretty easily.
Yeah, you know, it's as far as it comes to hardware, it's like, if I just spend a little bit more, I could get this, and then you get into that, like...
It's like, well, this is $30 more, but this is only $20 above that, and that's only $50 above that.
Right.
Oh, and wow, this is an entire...
And then you look at the price again, you're like, the 500 PC I was going to get is $1,000.
Now, what do you think about this? My personal advice to someone like Rob would be to say, if you can, wait. Save up, because really you will be so much happier buying a higher end PC. A lower end will work, but you're going to hate it in a couple of years. Buy yourself a higher end PC after saving up a little bit. You'll be much happier.
Yeah, it's always hard to wait, though.
It is.
All right, what do we have next to take a look at? Adrian Bazan?
That works, yeah.
Okay. Greg, what did they have to say?
Well, Adrian says, hello, know-how. Which is the best hard drive for professional video? Caviar Black, Barracuda, or what? Please, Padre, help.
Okay. So this seems kind of like a loaded question.
Yeah, it's one of those like PC versus Mac questions. Yeah, it really is. It's like, and everyone always likes the drive they're using, right?
Yeah. Well, I used to be... the only drives I used to buy were Seagates.
Yeah, the Seagate Barracudas were incredible. You know, the 7200 RPM, really fast transfer rate, pretty much worked for everything.
I don't really have loyalty to anything. No. It's things I've used that have worked. Western Digital and Seagate both have been fine, but it's like when I'm looking for a hard drive and if it fits my price point, like the drive I use right now on my home PC is a Digital Black.
Yeah.
And it's a 640 gigabyte. Mm-hmm. And then I also have a terabyte Western Digital, the green, for just backup and stuff. But there's no reason I would not go against Seagate if I found one for a good price.
Right. I mean, like, for example, in my personal system, I've got two SSDs, one for my programs and one for the video editing storage. But then I've also got a green, a big green, 3 terabyte green, which is sort of my offloaded when I'm not actively editing right. before I can copy it onto the SD, the solid disk. SDD drive.
Whatever they're called.
The thingy with the fast thing that you plug into the thing that gets faster kind of device. But you're right. I mean, the Western Digital Black is an incredible device. It works really well for a lot of people. How about this? We actually have an expert in here, in this brick house, who I think we call him like the bit master.
The flow bitter?
The flow bitter, yeah. Let's bring the flow bitter onto the show. Huh. Alex, what is your preference for storage?
Call me an expert. I don't actually know why, but for the TriCaster, we record onto Western Digital RE4 drives, and we do that because of the enterprise stuff in it that kind of makes it a little more reliable and robust, especially more for archival afterwards, because when we fill up the drive, we pull them out and keep them on the shelf, and something with that just makes us feel better about it lasting longer in case we want to go back and pull something out. We used to use on the old TriCaster, on the 850, we used Hitachi drives just because that's what was shipped with them, and I figured New Tech knows best, so we'll just do the same ones that they have. On the SAN, we use Seagate drives, again, because that just is what it came with, and that's actually the one that Padre was talking about where had a head crash the other day, and we had to pull it out.
How long do you think we were using that drive for?
It's hard to say. I don't know. There's no date on it because it's a Seagate, and they do date
codes.
So
1 terabyte.
So they're 1 terabyte. Yeah. I don't know if that drive was originally there the whole time that we've had the SAN at TWIT, so that could have been since 2009 or 2010, or if that's one that we have replaced sometime in the last couple of years. I do not know. But I'd say at least a couple of years.
Okay.
You know, and again, this is a personal preference thing. What I found is most of the high-end drives work really well. And the hard drive technology has matured to the point where there's no one manufacturer that has a huge head start on anybody else.
Right.
Seagate, Western Digital, Hitachi, Samsung, they're all going to work. So the only question is, do you want to pay a little extra for a performance premium? And if you're going to pay a little extra for a performance premium, honestly, what I would suggest is consider getting a small SSD backed by a solid hard drive.
Yeah.
That's going to give you better video editing performance than anything you can get.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Transfer it from your SSD and just get into the habit of backing up.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. There you go. Okay, so that's another non-committal. Meh.
Yeah, we're answer. Really good at that. All right, our next question comes from Lee Roca. I believe.
Lee Roche. Roca.
Or Roche.
You know what? I like Lee Roche. That sounds so
okay.
much.
Roche.
Smooth.
Gregory?
I'm going to say Rock.
Or all right. Rock. All right. What, you know, I'm just kind of.
Well, Lee has a crazy show idea. His idea is, what do you do with an older Mac Mini, late 2006, Core Duo, now that Snow Leopard support seems to have dried up?
Oh, Lee, you are a man after our own heart.
Yes, yes, he is.
Now, we have, actually, right in front of us, this is a 2006 Mac Mini. So this is probably the exact device that you have right now. And yeah, there's a lot of limitations. There's no HDMI out. There's no display port on this. It's very limited, but what we did is we figured out another way to use it in this. This is a MAME machine now. So this is our, whenever we need to play video games, this is the device that's going to let us go ahead and bring up our arcade emulator. This was originally in that big cabinet that you saw at TWIT. We took it down because it was kind of noisy.
I think we broke it.
And we kind of broke
it. Yeah.
I think someone
but we'll have. Fix it we'll f- at some point or another.
We probably
it might
should,
be even
right?
an episode.
Yeah. We'd probably update it because that one used an old CRT screen. You remember that?
Yeah.
Like the old arcade stuff. We'd probably put an LCD in there now, maybe a vertical plasma, who knows, something fun. But yeah, just because it's an old machine doesn't mean it's useless. There's still a lot of power in that 2006 Mac Mini. Mm-hmm. We are going to have an episode of Know How where we're going to show you how to upgrade these devices to their utmost. So maximum amount of memory. We're gonna max out. We're gonna change out the optical drive with a secondary hard drive. Replace the hard drive with a solid state drive, just to sort of extend the life.
Yeah.
But yeah, don't throw your old gear away. It's always good for something.
Unless it's piling up in your garage, which
tends
to happen.
Sell it.
Do you have any ideas what you'd want to do with the Mac Mini other than emulator?
Well, you know.
Can you do a media center?
What I'd actually really like to do is I'd like to drop like an open source distro on this. I'd like to put Debian on it, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe FreeBSD.
Mm-hmm.
You can do that with Mac Minis. I mean, it's going to take a little bit more experience, and you're going to have to poke around with a couple of things to make it work right. But it's a nice way, again, to reuse the hardware you already have.
Cool. Yeah.
So do that, please.
All right, and let's see. No, we have a couple more. Simon Zarafa?
Zarafa.
What do you have to say, Greg?
Well, Simon wants to know, have you done a segment on basic soldering techniques?
Oh, well, we have.
We have in episode 7 of Know How, back when it was Ayaz and Leo, way back. But you're working on a special little tidbit. I think we can tease it here, right? We had Smitty. If you've ever been to DEF CON, you know Smitty. Smitty was the guy in the hardware hacking village who helps all the newbies figure out how to solder properly.
Super nice guy. He came into the studio, and we filmed something. I just have to edit it together. So at some point, he goes over everything. He goes over the tools that you could use. You don't need to get started with anything expensive, and he explains that, and he shows you the proper techniques, which I was lacking after seeing how well he did.
I will say that. That's one of the things that I hate about those episodes, which is I love talking to people like Smitty who really know what they're doing. But
and
when I
you
see
feel
them,
ashamed.
I know, and he's so fast, too. He's just like, psh, 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 and I'm looking at it going, my soldering is so bad.
Well, and then even the soldering iron that he brought in was, it was something he had pretty much custom made when he was in high school. He fixed it, and he's still using it today.
It's made out of lasers.
It's like radio frequencies.
It really
or something.
Is. So stay tuned for that. We got that coming up, and we are going to show you all the wonderfulness about the life of a hardware hacking geek.
All right, should we do one more before
one
we
more.
Thank
I
our
think
sponsors?
One more. Right.
All right. He made his own time lapse device. Michael Dombrowski. What do you say?
Well, Michael says, "Here's a video I made for the community, or to show off on air." Wink, wink. Nudge, nudge. About the time-lapse segment and what I use for my time-lapses. I use a Celestron motorized telescope mount to get smooth moving shots.
Cool.
Oh, Alex, what do you say? Let's take a look.
See what do you got.
Hello, Pugger and Brian. First off, great job on your segment using the IKEA egg timer for your time-lapse. I wanted to show you what I use for my time-lapse. I have here a telescope mount that can be controlled with this simple controller. And I also have a special mount that goes from the dovetail that most telescopes use into a 1/4-20 jack that I can screw into my DSLR in order to take time-lapse video. So it's pretty simple. All I have to do is take the controller and tell it the rate. I have rates 1 through 9 that I can choose from. So I'll just go with 9 so that you can actually see it. Because when it's going at the lowest speed that it allows, it's quite slow. So you can't really see it with your naked eye. But in the time lapse, it looks really great. It's about the speed you want to go. You only want to use probably 1 or 2. And then once I get this going, I just use the small adjustable clamp in order to press the buttons and keep them held so that as the camera is taking its photos, it can move in 1 or 2 directions to pan up or left or right or down, whatever you want. And all you have to do is clamp it, set your camera to go, and leave. It's very simple. Here it is. It's very simple, just 2 motors, one that controls the pitch of your camera, and the other that controls the rotation of the camera. So I'm going to turn it to its highest speed, and I apologize for the sound, it's going to be a bit annoying. And as you can see, it's very simply rotating around in the central axis. And then, if you imagine that I have my DSLR mounted here, I can just pitch this portion up or down, and in a time lapse, this looks really great when you're going nice and slow. It's very smooth motion. It's easily controllable with this controller. You just have these 4 directional arrow keys. Just hold down on it, and it goes in whatever direction you want. So I hope you enjoyed. These can be found on eBay for about $100 to $150. And considering that professional systems go anywhere from 1,000 up, I think this is a really nice choice for people getting into time-lapse photography. So thanks again. I hope you found this video informative. This has been Michael Dombrowski from MikeDombrowski.com.
Thanks, Mike. That's awesome. Yeah.
That was really cool.
Now, I know there's some people in the chat room saying, but wait a minute, that's like a $500 telescope mount.
Yeah, but he's repurposing hardware he already has.
Yeah, so. Exactly. And we like that. Whenever you can find a way to use hardware in a way other than the way in which it was intended, there's a lot of ways in there. We like that, right? Yeah. That's true geeking.
That's the hack maker mentality.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's what we're looking for, and thank you very much for sharing that with us. Now, when we come back, we're going to be talking all about a portable podcasting rig and something that a lot of you wanted, which is how do you record audio in the field? When you get to a conference, when you get outside of your comfort zone, when you move outside of your studio, how do you make sure you get quality audio? And we're going to show you all how to do it right next, coming up after this thing.
But first, you might want to learn how to do the basics.
Let's do that, yeah. How about this? Do you want to learn more? Well, of course you want to learn more. That's why you're watching the show. You wouldn't be watching Know How if you didn't want to add to your store of knowledge. Well, what if I told you, Brian, that you could have an online presence, a place where you could go to fill your mind with everything that it needed to be filled with?
I do need to fill my mind with some more important things.
Than Titanfall.
If I wanted to brush up on my video editing some audio techniques, where would I go?
That's what you do. And I think where you would go would be lynda.com. Now, you know them. You love them. They are the premier online source of knowledge. And we are proud to have them as sponsors of Know How because they fill in all the gaps. We can't teach everyone everything when we're doing these episodes. And so lynda.com is who we rely on to send people to say, look, I understand you want to get this project done. Go ahead and talk to the guys at Lynda, look at their videos, read their tutorials, and find how it really works. Now, lynda.com is the premier online site for knowledge. What do you want to learn? Photography, audio and video editing, software skills? Well, with the easy-to-follow video tutorials on lynda.com, you can learn at your own pace, on your own terms, from top industry experts. With the lynda.com subscription, members receive unlimited access to thousands of online videos that cover a variety of software, creative, and business skills. Now, as Brian mentioned, one of the things that we really like about Lynda is that right now they've got premier classes. And it's something that we're switching the entire brick house over from. We're moving away from Final Cut into Adobe Premiere Pro. And it's nice to have a source where we could watch the tutorials, sit our editors down and say, see, this is how it translates from Final Cut to Premiere. For me personally, I like using Premiere because it's the editor of choice. It's what I've used all these years, but I don't remember everything that's included in them.
Right, and if you have the same situation as me, I started with Vegas, and then I worked here, so I had to learn Final Cut 7, and now Premiere I used offhand, but it's like I could use Lynda to brush up and learn, because once you know one of them, you can learn any of them, but Lynda helps me keep track of all the little details.
Exactly. Lynda helps you keep learning, and we love ourselves some learning. Now, Lynda lets you improve your skills, learn new software, and keep up with technology. They have over 2,000 courses with new courses added daily. Their new courses this week include Foundations of Programming, Programming for Kids, Up and Running with 3D Printing, Shooting a Photo Essay, Telling a Family Story, and UX Design Tools Photoshop. Instructors are working professionals at the top of their fields and expert teachers. These are people who actually know how to teach you the knowledge. They have high-quality video production from state-of-the-art studios, which means they're not the homemade YouTube videos that have really bad audio or really bad video. We love ourselves some YouTube, but we like when we have a proper production with high production values. It just makes us want to learn. Lynda also has curated course content. Each lynda.com course is carefully structured so that the users can learn from start to finish or jump to a specific chapter for quick answers. They also have transcripts that allow you to search within videos, so you can save yourself time by jumping to the point that will answer the questions you have. Lynda lets you watch from your computer, your tablet, or mobile device, and they let you switch and pick up on your chapter where you left off, no matter the experience level, no matter the range of technical skills, no matter what you're looking for. You get to learn at your own pace, on your own schedule. Lynda.com now also has certificates of course completion, which you can publish to your LinkedIn profile. So here's what we want you to do. Know-it-alls. Learn something new in 2014 with lynda.com. It's only $25 a month for access to the entire lynda.com course library, or for $37.50 a month, you can subscribe to the premium plan, which includes exercise files that let you follow along with the instructor's projects using the exact same assets. And you can try lynda.com right now with a free 7-day trial. Visit lynda.com/knowhow to access the entire library. That's over 2,000 courses free for 7 days. That's lynda.com/knowhow. And we thank Lynda for their support of Know How. Let's get to it. Brian.
All right.
We like ourselves some mobile video, right?
Oh, yeah.
Totally. We like ourselves some publishing from mobile locations.
Yeah, we do that.
So I thought maybe we should show people how they could make content outside of a studio like the Brick House.
And be pretty portable, it looks like.
Yeah, so this is a device that I've been playing with. This is from MXL. This is called their V001. It's a video editing suite for mobile professionals. But more than that, it's a way that you could take a device that you already carry with you, your camera phone, and use it as a podcasting rig.
Yeah, I mean, camera phones are actually pretty decent now.
Yeah, yeah, like, especially if you've got a Nokia. Wow,
yeah,
those are beautiful. Now, if you go to the product shot, this is what the kit consists of. So there's this. This is a bracket. This is just a bracket that allows me to hold my phone. So it's a universal bracket. It will work with any phone. It holds it in there, and it gives you sort of like a shooting stance, a way to go ahead and point the camera where you want. But the important thing is it gives you these mount points. And in these mount points, if you switch out to the wide shot, is something like this. This...
Well, that's a fancy little box.
Yeah, this is the MXL shotgun mic. Now, you know this phenomenon, right? People are using a camera phone. They're in a crowd. They're taking video. What does it sound like?
Yeah, it sounds terrible. As far as good as camera phone cameras are, cell phone cameras are, the audio is really
horrible,
that,
right? Because because you hear everybody.
It's multi-directional.
Yeah, it's
omnidirectional. It gets the room noise and everything, yeah.
Well, what they've done in this kit is they've combined this bracket with this Y cable and the shotgun mic so that you have a way to plug the shotgun mic into any camera, and this will work with any standard camera jack.
And then plug into your headphones so
and
you
then
can hear
headphones
it?
Over here.
What?
So now you have a way to monitor what you're doing and film on your camera at the same time. Now, go ahead and feel that. I mean, it's actually really, really comfortable.
Totally.
You cinch away the cables. And it's so much better than trying to hold that camera above. I mean, you've got a bracket. You can hold it much steadier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, better than trying to just hold the phone. Like, I can do one hand like this. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, it's nice. And, of course, you've got a mount at the bottom in case you want to put it on a tripod or a monopod. Mm. And the shotgun mic is actually really, really good. I was able to pick out a single person just by aiming the shotgun mic at him. And, of course, you still pick up, other noise.
Yeah.
But primarily, you could hear the person that I was aimed at.
Cool. Well, this looks like something you could just throw in your backpack or something.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't have to carry around a bunch of equipment. Maybe an extra battery for your phone, I guess.
Yeah, it uses a 1.5 volt battery. It's a AAA. It's got this carrying case. But yeah, the nice thing is you could throw it in your bag and just break it out in case you've got that story.
Because that's what happens to me. It's like I always want to film stuff. And that's part of the reason why I use GoPros so much is because I can take them places with me.
Yeah. Now, this thing is going to cost you about $190 on a site like Amazon. It sounds pricey, but when you consider what it contains and what it lets you do with the technology you already have, I actually kind of like it.
That's true. And I've seen something similar like this. I think we actually have it in my desk drawer. We brought it up a while ago, but it has a little stabilizer at the bottom, too.
Yeah,
so you can... Like, do some pans and stuff.
Well, I mean, that's why they have that little mount at the bottom. It's a standard mount. So you could technically put it on a stabilizer.
Accessorize.
Yeah. So if you're carrying around a camera phone all the time anyways, why not have something like this to give yourself that opportunity to grab just the person you want to listen to?
Yeah.
So that's the MXL VE001. It's their mobile media studio. And, I've enjoyed it. Now, there are other options for people who want to carry around maybe a more aggressive camera than a camera phone.
You mean they want to look the part?
Yeah. They want to look the part. So they want to have an actual camera.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, camera phones are great, but if you're walking into a CES press conference
they
with
might
a camera
not
phone,
look at you.
Yeah, they probably don't take you that seriously. Mm. Yeah. So the next thing I thought maybe you might want is something to put on your bigger camera. Oh. So like you've got a great SLR, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, it's a T3i, so I think it was like $700 when I first bought it, but it still works.
And it does
really
video.
Well. It does do video, yeah.
But what's the audio like on that camera?
It's pretty much the same as you'd get on your cell phone.
Because it's a camera. It wasn't designed for video. It just it can do video, which is why a lot of the podcasting world will use this. This has become sort of the industry standard. This is the Zoom H4n. This is a field recorder. Now, there's a couple of things that set this aside from everything else. First of all, it records on SD, so you don't have to worry about any expensive media. It's also very easy to pop out and take off on your laptop if you're doing field editing. It's got two really nice, super, super clean sounding condenser microphones that you can rotate. So you can go between 90 degrees and 120 degrees, depending on what kind of pickup you want.
So if we were in a situation like we are right now, how would you want to set that up to record our audio?
Right. So I would have a mount screwed into this, and then I would go ahead and turn the polar pattern to give me just a 90 degree wedge.
One facing you and one facing me.
Yeah, or I could do that. Right. If I wanted to do a dual setup, I could set it down like this, turn one microphone that way and one microphone this way, and now I'm recording just off the two axes.
Very cool.
Very cool, yeah. Now, it also gives me this. I've got two XLR inputs that are capable of phantom power, which means that I can power really, really nice mics. I just make this my central field recorder. This is something that you'll see on a lot of rigs because people have realized how powerful this is, and they use it for everything from something that sits on top of their DSLR to something that sits on top of their prosumer camera. They don't want to use the internal mic.
Hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
Very cool.
So this is the Zoom H4n. You can find this for about $245. It's not cheap, but at the same time, it's a really, really good unit.
Well, yeah, I think all audio video equipment is...
It gets a little pricey. Yeah, yeah. But how about this? Why don't I give you something that's not pricey?
All right. What do you got, Patrick?
I got this.
A donut?
Yes, it's a donut. Oh. Actually, inside this carrying case, this is an Audio-Technica. This is their 3550 series of condenser microphones. It's a very simple unit. It has a mini 3.5-inch stereo jack. And it's connected to, if I can open up the donut, this. It's a condenser mic with a cardioid pickup. Yeah, it's a decent piece of gear, but, you know, it's $20 on Amazon. It's not going to give you great sound, but it will give you better sound than what you get off your camera.
Right, okay. Yeah, I could see myself using that instead of trying to use the cell phone mic or something.
Yeah, and it's
self-powered. The DSLR mic. Okay.
It's got a little compartment here where you could put in a watch battery so that it provides its own phantom power.
Nice.
It's decent, but, you know, again, $20 is $20. It's not going to be awesome.
At least it's an option.
It's an option, yeah. What I've been using a lot when I was doing CES, especially before I joined TWiT, were these. These are the Sennheiser EW100 G3s.
Yeah, those look familiar.
These are really familiar. Now, the nice thing about this is you can buy them in a pack, which includes the transmitter, the receiver, and a stick mic transmitter as well, so you can plug it into a stick mic. Mm-hmm. About $700 or so. You can find them, you know, cheaper if you want to strip out the stick mic attachment.
Yeah.
But the nice thing about this is that they're UHF. They're very difficult to interfere with, and they work on pretty much everything.
Yeah, we use those all the time for reviews, for before you buy and stuff, and they are nice.
Yeah, and the microphone that they come with is decent. You know, I wouldn't use this in the studio, but in the field, this actually works pretty well. This is a condenser microphone as well, as you notice, it's not using XLR connectors. It's using the standard 3.5-millimeter stereo so that it will work with most of your gear.
Very cool. Wow. Now, there's a lot of options here. A
lot of options, but let's go one step up. Wow. I like this. There's a reason why this has the TWiT logo on it. It's because this is the one that we use when we go out of the studio. This is a Heil PR35. And I'm sorry for all the mic popping, guys. It's because I'm looking down. When I look down, I tend to look straight into my mic and puff, puff,
yeah,
puff.
Speaking of audio.
So this is a wonderful mic. It's the only dynamic mic that we're going to be showing off. It's a cardioid dynamic. It has a low-cut filter so that with a notch change, I can filter out all the really low frequencies that tend to annoy people.
What's it look like? Does this come off?
Yeah, the windscreen comes off.
Yeah.
But I'm not, I don't want to tear it off right now.
Oh, yeah, don't break it. Yeah,
let's not break the Heil PR 35. it's got a range of about 80 to 18 kilohertz or 40 to 18 kilohertz, depending on what you want to do with that notch filter. And this is kind of the standard because it's a dynamic mic. Remember, we did an episode on microphones and know-how in the past. It's going to give you a really deep bottom. It gives you that nice boom.
Oh, yeah, the big bass.
The big
bass. Bottom bass.
Yeah. Now, one more. I just want to show you one more, then I'm going to let you go because I know we're running out of time.
Mm-hmm.
That's this. I wish there could be some sort of light that comes out of this as I open
this up. We
can
add that post.
This is the Audio-Technica. This is the one that I use whenever I go out and I want to do a really good-sounding audio.
Okay.
This is the Audio-Technica ATR-898 lav mic. Now, this thing is wonderful. It's got a frequency response from about 200 to 15 kilohertz, which means you're going to miss out on the bottom. Uh-huh. But everything in the middle, oh, it's
Sound
so clear.
Okay.
This has a unidirectional pickup pattern so that if I put it on my lapel, it can get just my audio. It sounds really good. Now, it tends to rub, which is a problem, but if I am doing audio outside of the studio, this is what I would use.
That's the way to go.
Yeah, this thing costs about $223 or so. You could probably get the kit with the Phantom Power Unit here. This is an Audio-Technica 8537 for another $100. So for about $300, you get yourself one of the best-sounding lav mics in the business. In fact, this is what we use here at Twit.
Yeah.
So when we're sitting in the living room,
look familiar.
Yeah, this is the device that we've got plugged in right now.
Okay.
And it's the one that I choose. If you're going to get yourself some high-end audio, I would absolutely suggest you take a look at the Audio-Technica 898. This it really doesn't get better than this.
Cool.
Yeah. So that's a lot of audio options.
Yeah.
But I think what we want to do in the future, you want to come out in the field with me and let's actually practice
we'll
with some of these?
Yeah, well, maybe we can use it. Show all the different options and see kind of what the result looks like.
Yeah.
Can fit, if it fits your budget, you'll know what to go for.
Brian, we threw a lot of information at the folks here.
Whew,
right?
Yeah.
Actually,
struggling to remember most of it myself, but I feel like we have a repository where people could look at that stuff.
We do, yeah. If you go to our show notes page at twit.tv/KH, you'll find all of our episodes, and if you click into the episodes, you'll find our show notes. We give you exhaustive notes that show you links of where everything is, where you could buy stuff, how you put things together. It's part of the wonderfulness that is our Twit community.
Yes, and speaking of community, we have the fantastic Google Plus community, over 6,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
And as you saw me butcher your names earlier, you can interact with us there. You can post show ideas. Or actually, what would be really neat is if people did some of the projects that we presented.
Give us videos.
And if you want to show them off,
we'd be more than
happy to check those out.
And by the way, go ahead and put phonetic spelling of your name in case you don't want
for
us
me.
To butcher. Or if you don't want us to
unless,
be racist.
Unless you want the Italian
accent
for every name.
Wow, that's horrible. Now, we're not just on Google+. You can also find us on Twitter,
Twitter, yep.
At PadreSJ.
And I am at Cranky_hippo.
Cranky_hippo, yeah. and know-how is not just the two of us. There's a team that makes this work.
And we wouldn't be able to do it without.
And we wouldn't be able to. I think the first person in that team has to be Alex. He actually joined us today. We want to give him a hand. Maybe he'll
turn
be
on the lights
nice enough to switch over to himself. Maybe not.
He's doing a lot over there.
He's doing a lot. Yeah,
we should have teased it a little bit longer.
There
he is.
How's it going?
The Flowmaster.
That's the Flowmaster. He's the guy who makes all our bits flow. And we added a new member to the team.
That's right. Coming live from Skydesk 1, Gregory Burnett.
Cruising altitude above Twit. Yep.
That's right. About 8 feet above Twit right
He's
there.
Also the person who provides all the artwork for our episodes.
Yes.
And we put him on the Skydesk just to keep him away from us.
Just stay up there for a little while.
True story.
Guys, Good job, Greg.
Why can't I hang out over there with you guys?
No.
Do I offend?
Okay, let's close the show.
Yeah, let's close the show up. Just remember, now that you know,
go do it.
I'm Father Robert Ballos here.
And I'm Brian Burnett.
Get out of here.